The following podcast is part of the Underdog Sports Podcast Network. For advertising information or to find more great podcasts, visit us at www.theunderdogsports.com and follow us on Twitter at RealTheUnderdog.
Yeah, welcome to another episode of Get Paid, your one-stop shop for all things fantasy gambling and daily fantasy. We are proud partners of the Underdog Sports Podcasting Network. You can also catch us on Podcast One. As usual, you are listening to Sean and Brad. Brad, what's going on, buddy?
Howdy ho, Sean, brother.
You know, we got the Kentucky Derby. I was looking at BovadaSportsbook.com that, you know, we got some more, you know, kind of horse racing coverage coming up. Are you a Kentucky Derby guy?
You know, I'm not, although I do watch it. I never gamble on it or anything. It doesn't do much for me from that standpoint.
You know, I'm just no good at gambling on horses. I've looked into it. I think you can make money. I mean, certainly people do. I think you can make money on it, but I think it's one of those things you have to be at the track to do it. Because I've researched it. Believe me, I've read books, I've researched it, I've looked into it, I've dabbled in it, and everything I've seen is basically like, you know, the walkout is an important thing. You got to know what their stats in different terrain is. You got to know what their stats in different weather is. So there's a lot of, you know, maybe not analytics necessarily, but there's a lot of research that goes into it, and I just don't do it. But you know, I don't know what it is about the Kentucky Derby, but I've always been into it. Like, I've always been in, because it's the first of the Triple Crown, and I'm always like looking for the horse that's going to win the Triple Crown. Because I think it was before, you know, there's been a horse or two to win it recently. But before that, like, I don't remember, like, Seattle Slew in the 70s was the last to win the like, all three races of the Triple Crown. And so, like, it had never happened in my lifetime. So year after year, I watched the Kentucky Derby, and then you kind of sit back and wait and see, okay, well, are they going to win the Preakness and the Belmont, right? And so they get two, and then you're glued to the TV on the third to see if they're going to win,
It's a lot funner when the Triple Crown is at stake, for sure. I just watch it because I think it's an interesting subculture. You know, all these rich people with those big hats, man. Where do they find these hats?
It's like Costanza.
Get off with those damn hats?
what do you find attractive about the Orthodox faith? And he says the hats.
The hats, yeah.
I find the hats attractive. Yet another Seinfeld reference for the
hats. Nope, there's no stakes.
Yeah, you know, at some point, somebody's just going to wear an outfit that's just one giant hat. Like, why not just wear it? Like, you know, cut a hole in the head and just wear a big top hat.
It really is an interesting subculture. I've yet to meet anybody that's been a part of it. Yet you turn on the TV and there's hundreds of people doing it. It's really fascinating. They come from the Hamptons or something. I don't know.
Yeah, the celebrities get into it. I wonder if Gronkowski has another horse this year now that he's out of football. But no, I mean, I like it. I'm definitely gonna be watching, or at least record it. But you know what? The funny thing is that so the first horse, I can't even remember the horse that did it. But you know, it's within the last like 3 to 4 years, maybe 4 to 5. There's a horse that won the Triple Crown the first time in like, you know, however long.
Yeah, what was that horse's name? Santa's Little Helper or something like
Santa's
that.
Santa's Little Helper.
I used to love when Santa's Little Helper would get out and it would just bolt.
It's a greyhound, right?
Gone.
For those of you who don't watch The Simpsons, yeah, it's the Simpsons dog, the reformed greyhound or the rescued greyhound. No, nah, man, like the one year that they won the Triple Crown, it was the one year I didn't watch it. Like and it's not that I didn't watch it. I just forgot to record it because I was out doing something and I wanted to watch it. So I didn't, you know. Anyway, another thing quickly before we kind of get into stuff, because I do want to get into the draft, NFL draft, that is. So another thing is I was looking at Bovada, and they have, you know, the Warriors and they have the Bucks favored. And I'm looking at these series, Brad, and I know you're kind of not as dialed into the NBA as you are in the NFL. And you and I share that, you know, that attribute, I guess. But we both pay attention to basketball. And, you know, what do you think about, like, these matchups? I mean, I got to think that you're thinking Warriors, right? Because we just talked about this a couple weeks ago. Warriors over Houston?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, Houston would be the one to take them out, but it's definitely not going to happen. They do not have the firepower to deal with the Warriors, and nobody does. Mm-hmm. The Bucks looked terrible in their first outing. They lost game one at home, which is not a good sign. They had no answers. That doesn't mean they can't win the series. I still think they can, but I think that Houston has zero shot. You?
Yeah, I think they have zero shot. I think it's a 5-game series, if that. You know, I know, like Houston, you were on Functional Sportsaholic, our other podcast, a couple weeks ago. We talked about this, and you know, I know Houston basically with their analytics, they're a big analytic team. They did everything they could to get the pieces to get the points to match the Warriors, and it's the Warriors, man. You're not doing anything against them. Like Durant at this point, I'm not going to say. He is peaking, right? I mean, I'm not going to say it yet, but he's probably my top player in the NBA now. And that's the first time I've said anybody other than LeBron for, I don't know, a decade? More than a decade?
Yeah, right, me too. We see this with all great players is they really hit that sweet spot. It's like that 2-3-year stretch where they just control every aspect of the game and their skills are at a top level. And they're just in the flow completely, you know? And then later on, it starts to trail a little bit because they can't jump as high and they can't run as fast and all that. But I think that's where we're witnessing now with Durant.
Yeah, I'm with you. And, you know, I wasn't sure if Durant was ever going to get over the LeBron hurdle because their careers overlapped so extensively, right? So I always figured Durant, you know, would be a little like always the number two to LeBron. But I think what changed is LeBron is just, and we're going to go into this in detail. I want to talk to Sam about this on Functional Sportsaholic because he's kind of our NBA expert with this little thing that we're running here. But, you know, I just don't feel like LeBron is dialed in on basketball.
He's not, man. He took a different path. Yeah. He went to an LA team that clearly did not have enough talent to compete on any level, especially in the West. You know, and then you combine that with the fact that, I mean, what does the guy have? He's making movies. He has his own TV show. Mm-hmm. There's a number of things. And I think that, and you probably do agree with me, is that he just reached a point where he was done fighting for legacy and fighting for championship records. And he realized he was, 3-6? Right. 3-5 overall, something like that. And I think it just wore on him, and he's never going to be Jordan, who was 6-0, and I probably accepted that on some level.
Yeah, at this point, I again, let's take a look because, you know, this team kind of went off the rails when he got injured early in the year.
It did. You know? It did. The injury did not help them. But when he came back, they were also bad.
They were bad, but I feel like when he came back, they weren't dialed in. Like the team was actually starting to get some momentum going. And I thought maybe they would make a move. They never really made a move. I think they got to get rid of Lonzo Ball on this team. His dad talks too much, and he's a good piece to trade. Dude, they have a lot of good young pieces. They got to move some of these guys to get – if they really want to go all in with LeBron, they got to get him like a running mate, you know?
Okay, I agree. But LeBron made the biggest mistake of the season, and the biggest mistake as a leader that I have seen in a long time. He publicly came out and said – we need to get some other guys. Mm. And him and his crew, I forget the name of his organization, whatever they're called there.
Whatever.
You know,
his buddy, like their company,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, they actually recruit for the team also in a way. Mm. And they were vying to get Anthony Davis publicly.
Maverick Carter.
Maverick Carter. I think they're called Big Sports maybe, something like that. But man, that was a big mistake, dude. How are you going to get young guys to try to rally with you when – they feel like you're rejecting them.
Right. When you feel like we say this on Functional Sportsaholic too. I mean, there's something about being a leader, right? And people don't want to be led by people that think of them like a disposable piece. You know, right. Even if you think they're a disposable piece and you want to get rid of them, like you got to treat them like they're integral to the team because you're never gonna get anything out of them. That's management, that's sports, that's everything, that's parenting,
right?
You let people know you know how important they are, and that, you know, they just got to work a little bit harder and they can get something going. And I felt like that's what he was doing to begin the year, but you're right, man. I mean, that's this team fell off the rails, and I don't think it's going to work ever for LeBron and
Los Angeles. There's a big difference between saying we need to get some other guys in here or saying, you know what? We have the guys we have. They're incredible, and we're going to play really well and just get better. And anyone else that wants to join us, will more than well, you know, we'll consider it. But for right now, these are the boys, and this is what we're going to do.
It's
a completely different narrative.
We weren't doing this podcast back in the day, but I always felt like LeBron made a big mistake by trying to orchestrate the trade and getting Kevin Love and getting rid of Andrew Wiggins. Like, I know Wiggins isn't the best thing in the world, but I always thought that, hey, man, give him a couple years and you can actually build something there with Kyrie, LeBron, and Wiggins. You know, he just makes these – he's a bad GM. He's an awful GM. But anyway, that's – I think it's enough of that. So NFL draft was this weekend. You know I love myself some NFL draft. Always have. You know that, right, buddy?
I do know that. You're on it.
Yeah, man. So I used to write for NFLDraftBlitz.com. That's actually how I know Chris, the owner of Underdog. That's how I got this podcast on the air. I used to be a Redskins team columnist back when I was, you know, just basically bleeding, living and dying with that team, screaming at the TV and all that stuff. But Brad, as you and I were just talking about off the air just a little bit ago, Dan Snyder has really just wrecked my football life. I can't root for that franchise until he's gone. I just can't.
No, the guy is so off-putting. I couldn't even imagine rooting for anything he's a part of.
I can't think of a I shouldn't say that. Donald Sterling of the Clippers a couple years ago. But, like, there are he's basically on the bottom, right? If you look at a bell curve, you know, like, you know, if you look at college classes, right, the top 10% get A's and F's. On the bell curve, he's on the F. He is on the bottom 10% of owners.
But it took Dan Gilbert a bunch of not only racist but misogynistic comments. Am I correct in that, if I'm remembering right?
Gilbert's handling the LeBron James situation kind of bordered on racism. The Donald Sterling stuff
Clippers
was, was the guy that was super racist, yeah. So I got to say, right, he's the least likable, and he's not even an owner anymore. He had to sell the team as a result of that. But I'm trying to think, like, in professional sports, not even NFL, but, like, who's more unlikable than Dan Snyder, or at least on the same level of dislike? People maybe could say Cuban, although I don't say that, just because he's out there a lot. I like Cuban, though.
I don't mind Cuban, not at all.
And you know what? He actually he can build winning teams, although Dirk, you know, the Mavericks haven't been great. But, like, who else? Like, Jerry Jones kind of bothers me just because he's got a lot of ego. And I got to say, as a Cowboys
– He does, but it's not like he hasn't earned it.
Yeah.
And I don't think – I think he genuinely cares about the success of his team as well as the profits.
Yeah,
I think –
He
wants the winner first.
And I think Dan Snyder genuinely cares. I just don't think he understands how to build a winning team or create a winning
culture.
But he looks
like a weasel, doesn't he? He just seems like the kind of guy that would hit on your sister or something. You know, and, like, tell you all about it. He just seems like such a little snake in the grass. Yeah. And I could be completely wrong, man. I've been wrong about plenty of things, but
yeah, I'm not on that $100 million yacht, so I can't tell you what his personality's like.
I bet it's terrible.
No, man, I mean, really, I'm escaping. There are some people, maybe the old Marlins ownership or something like that. Like, Derek Jeter bothers me as an executive. I'm trying to think, man. I know there's got to be some, but I can't think of anything off the top of my head.
Yeah, I can't either. The two guys you named, Cuban and Jones, I actually don't mind them at all. I give a lot of props for how smart and successful they are.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. Like, if I was a Cowboys fan, I don't know how I would feel about it. As, like, as a Redskins, you know, I guess a reformed Redskins fan, but somebody who, again, lived and died with the team for years, I actually liked Jerry Jones because I thought he was detrimental to Dallas's success.
Correct. I was just going to say that the one mistake I think Jerry Jones makes is that he's the owner as well as the GM. Mm-hmm. And I think he's a fantastic owner, and I definitely think he's a subpar GM. I mean, he struck gold, you know, no pun intended, in 1989 with those guys he drafted. And ever since then, they've been a dumpster fire, you know.
Yeah, but I still give Jimmy Johnson basically the lion's share of the credit there. And, you know, Jones was building another winner. He had Parcells. I think they went 14-2 with one of those Parcells teams.
And who was the quarterback there?
It went from Bledsoe to Romo during Parcells'
stint. Oh, and they had Romo. Yeah, that was a good squad.
That was a good squad. And then he ditched Bill Parcells. I don't think that's something you should do.
I don't think so either. That's probably a poor move. But and to your point, he probably ditched him because Parcells challenged him on a leadership level, which is why he's got Garrett there. You know, he treats him like a little stepbrother.
Yeah. Yeah, it's, you know, again, I'm not really throwing shade at Dallas there. I don't know. I bet you that it's probably up and down. I bet you he's kind of even a polarizing figure within Dallas. And when I say polarizing, I don't think anybody hates him, but whether he's good or bad for the team. But, you know, the other thing is Steve Jones, his son, when he takes over, like, Steve Jones has his head on his shoulders. Like, Jerry Jones was going to draft Johnny Manziel. And his son was just like, dude, don't do it. Don't do it.
So, you know, there's he's one of those guys.
Yeah. And I think the team is getting better and better as the younger Jones kind of takes more control of the franchise, you know, and some of the day to day stuff, like the player stuff. So, I mean, that's good. I think there's definitely some good things ahead for Dallas. That would have really hurt me to say about 5 or 6 years ago. But now I truly don't care. All I care about is making money, which is what this podcast is about. All right, well, let's actually get into the draft coverage. You know, first round, there's been a lot of drama. Let's just start with the Giants, right? That's the biggest drama. Gettleman does not seem to... Well, I mean, that's the criticism is that he doesn't have a plan, but, I mean, he was behind a lot of those good Panthers teams, so I don't think that he doesn't have a plan, but he really does sound like an idiot, doesn't he?
He really does, man. When he had that, you know, everyone was questioning his pick, and then when he came out, probably I think it was the day after, he seemed very clueless in his explanation.
clueless is and, right. That's the perfect word.
Right. He had no idea what he was talking about. He didn't even know what conference the guy he just drafted was from. It was a little bizarre, to be honest.
Yeah, it was bizarre. But, you know, I saw some people, like, you know, on my social media feeds going kind of nuts about it. When I saw the pick, come down, I thought, okay, you know, like Murray went to Arizona, and we've talked about it on the show. I think he's a perfect fit for what Kingsbury wants to do if he can stay healthy. That's the big question. We're going to talk about this throughout their offs, you know, the previews of 2019 season. We'll get into like the Kyler Murray and Arizona stuff. I think it's interesting. I think from a fantasy point of view and a daily fantasy point of view, Murray could be a monster. But health is always going to be a risk there, as Brad, you know, brings up quite intelligently, if I might say. But you're welcome, man. You're welcome. I'm here to build you up. Daniel Jones, you know, I'm looking now. I'm actually looking at the NFL.com draft tracker as we speak. And Jones was the fourth rated quarterback. Drew Locke was ahead of him. Haskins was ahead of him. Murray was ahead of him. But, you know, the big criticism is Haskins is there. You got to take Haskins. Why do you take, you know, Daniel Jones when you could take Haskins? Or the criticism is, well, you could, if you wanted Haskins, that's fine. You could have drafted him at 17. I disagree with all of that. First of all, I don't think Haskins is a fit for New York. I think that would have been an oil and water situation. You know, I don't think he's the kind of guy, you know, Shermer, that's going to meld well with Shermer. Now, I've seen some tape, you know, some interviews that says, you know, Shermer isn't excited about having, you know, Daniel Jones, but, you know, he's going to work in the system. He's the same type of quarterback as Manning is.
Okay, why is that good? What are we doing here?
Well, I mean, same type of quarterback.
Okay, so what?
Well, Peyton Manning is the same type of quarterback Eli Manning is.
All right, listen. So the problem I have with them is not who they drafted this year. It's who they didn't draft last year.
Yes.
Last year's draft was full of quarterbacks.
I'm with you, man.
There was, at least four, possibly five franchise quarterbacks out there for the taking, and they didn't take any of them. And now this year they reach. Mm-hmm. They reach because the guy knows Peyton Manning. Boy, these Mannings, they really have an effect on the world, don't they?
Yeah. Where's Cooper Manning when you need him?
Oh my God.
Yeah. Hey, man, I'm with you. I said it was a mistake last year. You know, on all the podcasts, I said the Giants should have drafted, you know, any of the quarterbacks. I felt like the Giants probably should have traded for Rosen because then it would only cost them a second round pick. They didn't do that. You know, I don't like the move, but the idea, I think the criticism of not taking Haskins in that spot, I don't think that's a great criticism. I think Haskins is more molded because look, you know, I've seen him. He's basically a 1 year starter at Ohio State. There's a lot of criticism about his like work ethic and leadership, you know, skills. And, you know, yeah, he stepped it up in the last half of the season, but he's a one season starter at Ohio State who always has better talent than everybody else. What's it going to be like when he has to step into now Washington? And, you know, and by the way, I don't believe, I have a pretty good sense of the Grudens and how they operate. I don't believe that Gruden was behind this pick at all. He is a shotgun quarterback that is running a West Coast, you know, principled system. Mm-hmm. The footwork looks sloppy. The analyst even said it and showed, he doesn't always get his feet set when he throws. He gets inaccurate. Look, man, this Haskins, everybody's talking about how Haskins is going to be the starter in Washington. It's going to be Keenum, at least to start the year. And,
well, yeah, that may be true. I mean, Case Keenum, the game isn't too big for Case Keenum. You know, you throw him in there, and it's not like he's going to be hiding behind the refs, yelling for him to blow the whistle. But, you know, you bring up footwork, and I don't disagree. But I think you can correct something like that. You can't correct arm strength, and you really can't correct maturity. And it seems like Haskins has both of those. Hmm. You can correct me if I'm wrong.
The maturity, I think, was in question, at least from a leadership leadership point of view, just like in terms of like, you know, you know, he hasn't always been in the best shape. He hasn't always been dialed in during the spring and all that stuff.
All right. Well, then I do stand corrected. That is I think that's an underrated attribute when you're drafting quarterbacks. Mm-hmm. Look, if you want your wide receiver yelling, you know, you want to win, throw me the ball, dog. Right. If you can put up with a little bit of that. But if you have that at quarterback, you know, guys calling other people out, it's going to go sour real quick.
Yeah. Here's another here's another Dan Snyder little quote for you. So Haskins actually, I think, went to high school with Dan Snyder's son. So as soon as I heard that in pre-draft coverage, because I didn't know that going, and as soon as I heard that, I thought, the Redskins are trying to trade up and to get him, because there's some kind of familiarity with Snyder. Snyder wants a quarterback. Every NFL team should want a quarterback. But then I saw him slip, and I was like, oh, there's no way they're passing him. And I think Gruden, it was Gruden's worst nightmare, thinking like, oh, gosh, Haskins is coming, because I don't think that Gruden wants him. Now, he'll make him work. But, you know, Gruden also famously benched RG3 when the organization was telling him to play RG3. And he's basically like, well, he's not our best chance to win, so fire me if you want to play him.
You know what I have a problem with, Sean? Mm. Sorry to interrupt. And I know you're going to disagree with me, but I don't like the division between GM and head coach. I think they should be the same guy, man. And if I had a franchise, that's how I'd play it. Because why do you want somebody else shopping for your groceries? You know, I just don't think that works very well. What are your thoughts?
Well, you know, I think you need some separation there, but I think that there's a healthy way to do it, right? Like, I think that,
yes.
You know, I think that the Redskins way, obviously the GM and the head coach aren't always on the same page. I think that, but I also think that, you know, Gruden's made a lot of mistakes with his coaching staff, in my opinion, as well. You know, you can't fault him for losing McVay, but, you know, it's interesting that when McVay has left, the team got a little bit worse, right? You know, that's, and then, you know, they've cycled through a couple defensive coordinators. They could have had Wade Phillips. Wade Phillips wanted to go there, and Gruden went with somebody else because he liked the guy's energy better. Mm-hmm. Well, now you have McVay, their ex-offensive coordinator, the guy who's calling plays, and Wade Phillips. And, oh, hey, by the way, they went to the Super Bowl in 2 freaking years, right?
Yeah. Right.
And then, by the way, Kyle Shanahan was running the offense. You with me?
I am, yeah.
Okay, sorry, you went staticky for a little. Okay, so I'm going to re-say. And then you have Kyle Shanahan, who was running the offense before that. And a couple years later, he went to the Super Bowl with the Falcons, right? So, I mean, the Redskins do a pretty decent job, I think, of acquiring talent. But they don't do a great job of developing talent and letting it breathe. But, you know, that's probably – let's just save that for the rest of the thing. So let's talk about the quarterbacks, though. Like, you know, Daniel Jones, I don't see him playing this year. Kyler Murray, we talked about, you know, from a fantasy point of view, I think he's going to be a good one because he's going to be able to extend plays. Kingsbury's system is tailor-made for, you know, getting the ball out of your hand. I think he'll have a nice amount of touchdown passes. I like it. Dwayne Haskins, I don't like him from a fantasy point of view at all. I think Haskins would have been the perfect fit in a system like, I don't know, like a shotgun system, like Pittsburgh, like maybe Indianapolis, like Tampa Bay. Tampa Bay would have been a great spot for him with Bruce Arians. And with Winston, you don't know if Winston's your franchise quarterback or not. I think Tampa will regret. Well, I guess they won't because I don't think Haskins will fulfill his potential in Washington. But had Haskins been drafted by Tampa at 5, and I know why they didn't do it, but had he been drafted at 5, that could have really worked. But, you know, live and let live, I guess.
That's a good point, man. I think they're going to – they like Winston over there in Tampa, man. And it's
That GM, dude, that GM is begging to get fired. I cannot believe he's still there. Let me look. He drafted another kicker. Let me figure out where the kicker
was. Oh, God, did he do that again?
5th-round kicker. He didn't trade up for him this time, but he drafted a kicker in the 5th. This is the guy that traded a 3rd and a 4th round to trade up and acquire a 2nd-round pick to draft a kicker.
That's so odd.
This is your GM, Tampa. Sorry, man. I'm not. I don't mean to hate on you. I mean, I'm from Central Florida, but for crying out loud, dude.
That's bizarre.
Yeah. America's pastime is back. The smell of the grass, the crack of the bat, and now that sensation of money burning a hole in your pocket. Yahoo Daily Fantasy Contests bring you closer than ever to the game you love. Yahoo Daily Fantasy offers single day and week-long contests so you can pick a new team every single day if you like, and I like it. To get started, go to yahoo.com/dailyfantasy and find a contest that's right for you. Try a 50-50 contest where 50% of the lineups win, or you can try Yahoo's innovated quick match feature where they'll pair you with another player of your skill level. And that's a big thing. You know, a lot of the daily fantasy providers out there, they get nailed because there are some sharks out there taking advantage. You don't get that with Yahoo. Or play for larger prizes and bigger bragging rights and guaranteed prize pool contests. Yahoo Daily Fantasy also has the lowest management fees across the industry. Don't play with the other sites that charge high fees just to get in on the action. Yahoo's lower fees mean more prizes for you, the players, and of course, the winning. Use promo code POD25 for $25 off in free play when you make your first deposit. The sooner you get to playing, the sooner you can get to winning. Go to, once again, everybody, it's yahoo.com/dailyfantasy to start playing. That promo code for that free $25, it's POD25. Very minimal account entry to get in there. Go ahead. Once again, POD25, it's yahoo.com/dailyfantasy. Let's talk a little bit about running backs. Let me just pop over. Oh, I'm sorry. Before running backs, I want to go look at the Bovada futures for the teams that drafted quarterbacks. So for Super Bowl wins, Arizona is at +10,101. Uh-huh. Basically, that's no surprise. Denver, you know, their odds aren't going to be really affected because Flacco's still going to be the starter. Washington is funny because they are even with Arizona at +10,000. It's interesting to me to see how far that they've, like the Redskins organization, they have talent. We talked about this last week, but they have talent, but they can never keep them healthy and on the field. I think, you know, this is a team that's not, you know, people are probably going to predict that they're going to go 3-13 next year. They're not going to, man. They're going to be like a 7-9, 6-10.
I wouldn't say 3-13 at all.
But everything I'm looking at says that Washington is in the bottom two or three in the league.
That actually does surprise me. I don't think they're one of those teams. Not at all.
Yeah, maybe that's the gambler in us, right? Because we can find the value in this stuff, and I think that goes to like the, you know, public perception versus what's reality. The Redskins, just I know how they play. They're in a division. It's a black and blue type division. They're going to be able to play pretty well there. But
I think they're a 7-8 win team, excuse me, and you know 9 if they get a little hot and learn how to play together. I by no means think they're a dumpster fire and the bottom of the league. I think that's a stretch, man. I think we have our first bet of the year.
Yeah, I know. That's I'm going to be very curious to see when the over unders for the wins come out. They might already be out. I haven't looked at Bovada for those yet. But when those win totals come out, I bet you it's going to be like 3 or 4, and I'm going to be over on that like all day.
Oh yeah, oh yeah.
Who else? The Giants. Let me look at their numbers here. Sorry, New York +7,000. So like the quarterbacks aren't really doing a lot for the odds yet. By the way, Brad, Cleveland is at +1,200. Like they're one of the top. One of the top bet teams. I guess it's all hype. I don't see them as a Super Bowl favorite.
That's also preposterous. I saw those odds. Can we all just calm down? All right. First of all, they have a great receiver. Okay. I'll give you that. But I mean, what is a receiver worth in Vegas? Odell Beckham gets injured, doesn't play a game. Is that a half a point or a full point?
You know, but that's when the odds shot up, oddly enough. I guess it's the thought.
That's my point. It's really weird.
You know, I have been making the argument, though, that Odell Beckham is, like, probably the one receiver in the league, maybe one of two, where, like, he makes that offense go. You know, like, Eli Manning with Beckham and Eli Manning without Beckham is a different quarterback.
Yes, and Beckham so usually, is good enough to be a bit of a Band-Aid. I agree.
Yeah, he's worth some points to me, more than a typical receiver. But, yeah, I'm with you, man. That whole thing was just, like, crazy hype. Let's move it to running backs, like I teased just a little bit ago. So I'm just going to bring up some of the top drafted, maybe in the first, like, 3 or 4 rounds or 2 or 3 rounds or something. But Josh Jacobs was the first off the board to Oakland with the 24th pick. And I got to say, man, I did not like that at all. you know, he's a running back. If I read his 40 time correctly, it was a 4.65 running back. Like, yeah, there are defensive ends that run faster than that.
Well, listen, you know, talking about defensive ends, you know, I'm of the mind that there are about five positions far more valuable than running back that you need, you know, great talent at. You know, I think the importance has definitely decreased in the league, and I don't think that you should be taking one in the first round. That's just my opinion, man. If there's a badass defensive end or lineman out there, I think you take that guy, you know, regardless of whether you, quote, need a running back.
Right.
They're becoming a little bit obsolete, man. That's just my take.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know about obsolete, but certainly you can find.
Obsolete is a strong word. I'll give you that.
But you can find them late, right? You can find them late. Burning
a
first-round
pick.
Just
get a guy late that's faster than other people. Okay. You got a pretty good running back then.
Like everybody was saying, like all the draft analysts everywhere was saying that cornerback was so deep. And at that point, right, the late first into the second and third round, draft a cornerback, man. You can always need a cornerback. I don't care who you have on your roster. You always need some cornerbacks coming in.
Well said, man. That's far more important than a running back these days.
Yeah, man. I thought that
was fullbacks while you're at it.
Yeah, I mean, like Josh Jacobs, it's a little frustrating for me as a fantasy analyst because, you know, I look at him. He's an Alabama running back. Trent Richardson was an Alabama running back. You know, you never really know what you're going to get with these guys in the pros. You know, Alabama's probably best running back in the NFL right now is Alvin Kamara. And oh, by the way, he transferred out of Alabama and played somewhere else.
I just want to say this, dude. The last time a great running back was actually the reason a team won the Super Bowl was Terrell Davis in 1998. You know what I'm saying? You get these, you try to draft these badass running backs that are going to be the face of your franchise. And yeah, they're really good. But it just doesn't equal the wins that people assume it does.
Yeah, I'm trying to think. You could make the argument that Marshall Faulk, which is also in that same around timeline. Yeah. But you also had Kurt Warner, who was slinging it.
Right. I mean, he was slinging it.
Yeah, man. That's an interesting one, man. That's an interesting point of view. I hadn't thought about that. That's a good one. Mm-hmm. From a fantasy point of view, look, he's going to get opportunities. I like the Gruden system. Gruden likes running backs in Oakland, so he's going to get some. He's going to get some run, but. Gosh, man, I'm going to really be watching that carefully in the preseason. I'm worried that this guy's, you know, to me, he has bust written all over him, but we'll see. And that's such a good place to find value in the fantasy world. So I want him to be good so that I can recommend him and feel good about myself and recommending a good running back. But I don't feel good about it, man. Like, he comes with some risk to me. So I'll be watching actual games. You know, I'm going to be down on him until I see him in live game action because I want to see what his speed's like. Let's see. Miles Sanders drafted by the Eagles. From a fantasy point of view, look, the Eagles need running backs, but they also play like seven running backs in a game. So they found a guy. I can't remember his name off the top of my head.
That's my point, man. You can just run these running backs in, you know, on committee, cycle them through. One guy gets hot. I mean, Belichick's been doing that for years. One guy gets hot for a couple weeks. Awesome. Then you put a new guy in there based on a new scheme. I don't know, man. I just. Not to keep harping on the same point, but it's a thrower's league, and the league has changed. So you got to adapt, man. On defense, you get cornerback, safety, defensive end to stop the pass, period. Right?
Yeah, I'm with you. And like even going back to Philly, and I think to underscore your point, there are plenty of people that you can plug in at running back, and I can't even remember the guy that was like really good for the back half of the year. I can't even remember his name. I think he went to Notre Dame, and he was an undrafted guy. He was an undrafted guy. You can put
was it Adams?
Maybe. Uh-huh, Samuel Adams.
Yeah, Sam Adams, something like that.
You have David Montgomery, third round pick going to Chicago. I thought that was interesting because Chicago they have the small guy Tarik Cohen. They had Jordan Howard, but they let him walk. And now you have David Montgomery. But again, I looked at his tape. And Brad, you remember when Reggie Bush came out like a decade or two decades ago, whatever it was. You know, Reggie Bush was all the rage, right? He had such a skill set. And actually, Reggie Bush, the player, would be better in today's NFL than he was when he came out, just because they would know how to use him a little bit better, like specifically in the passing game a little bit more. But, you know, Bush, like, when he came into the NFL, the first, like, 1 or 2 years, he kept trying to run to the sideline and get
Well, he kept trying
around.
To hit home runs, like, in college.
Yeah.
And that's just not there.
It's not there. And so,
You're
like,
not faster than everybody.
Exactly. And this guy, David Montgomery, every piece of film that I watched is... He would take the ball and then he would like shift his legs a little bit and not hit the hole. And it just seemed like such an odd pick because Nagy runs like that. He's from that Andy Reid tree. He likes running backs that can just kind of like, you know, cut and go. And everything that I saw, like even his highlights, David Montgomery, I didn't see a cut and go running back. So this is another running back going into a good situation that I'm a little hesitant about. I still think Cohen is your running back du jour over there, whether it's a PPR or a non-PPR league. I think, you know, Cohen's just going to get the yards.
Yo, one time we were at Prime Italian with Rocco and his girlfriend, and Reggie Bush and his girlfriend made eye contact. He blew a gasket, dude. He was huffing and puffing all night long. It was, he was so upset.
Why was he upset about eye contact?
Why they gave each other kind of a little look, dude, and he was all puffed up.
Rocco.
He was like a blowfish in that place, dude. He was all heated. It was so good.
Rocco, for our listeners out there who don't know Rocco, he's like, I think he was 5'4", 5'5", and about, you know, 205 pounds of pure muscle.
He's mighty.
He is a mighty. He's mighty. He's a mighty guy.
Muscles, marinara.
Rocco. Reggie Bush and Rocco. I love it. Let's see. There was a couple of running backs I'd like. Damian Harris getting drafted by the Patriots is interesting. To me, that means and for, by the way, he's also from Alabama. I think he's the better Alabama running back. I wish he had gone to Oakland. But Damian Harris, I actually think, you know, projecting forward, he might take over for James White when James White's up for a free agency. You know, they have a Sony Michel. Now they just have basically a ton of really good running backs there. You know, typical Patriot thing, the rich get richer there. I like Daryl Henderson from Memphis, but he went to the Rams. So, like, I loved him as a player on the field, but, you know, he's going to basically be spelling. I think McVay looked at the season last year. He saw Gurley get hurt, and C.J. Anderson did a great job, but C.J. Anderson is not the same running back in the passing game that Gurley is, and you know, it took some things away, and I think, you know, McVay is just like, you know what, let's spell Gurley a little bit more. So I think Gurley's touches are going to go down a little bit, and you know, Daryl Henderson might be you know, worked in on third downs, or, you know, I think this is going to hurt his Gurley's touches a bit, but it's not going to be a committee by any means. It's still going to be a bell cow situation, but maybe not as to the extent that it was. Who else? Do I like anybody else? Devin Singletary is the last one I'll talk about for Buffalo. They said he's basically a mini LeSean McCoy. LeSean McCoy's out. He's not going to be in Buffalo anymore. Mm-hmm. He's tweeting spoilers to the Avengers. He's just a piece of crap. No. I shouldn't say he's a piece of crap because I don't really know the guy. But yeah, Singletary, after watching last season, McCoy just kind of fell flat from earth. They got to go younger. They got to get youth in the backfield. Daryl Singletary, to me, is the top at this point. The top-rated rookie running back from my point of view. I know everybody's going to say, you know, the Oakland running back, Josh Jacobs, just like they said Rashard Penny last year. As with last year, I promise you I'm right this year. Singletary is your guy. It's going to maybe take him a couple weeks, maybe not, but he'll be out there. Let me also look at some Bovada odds for these teams that drafted running backs. Oakland actually probably went up a little bit just because of their total draft. They had a lot of first rounders in there. Let me look at Oakland. Oakland's at plus 6,000, so not great, but not awful. New England, by the way, who, you know, not that the running back mattered to that equation, but they're probably still the odds on favorites. Certainly them and the Rams, they're doing pretty well. Yeah, plus 700 for New England. Who else? Oakland, but yeah, Buffalo's not going anywhere. They're at plus 10,000 too. With the Redskins, with the Cardinals. And that's where they should be, frankly. There's no chance. Why would anybody really put money on Buffalo to win a Super Bowl?
Yeah, I don't imagine one person will do it. I'd like to meet that guy.
Yeah, I know. And say, hey, you know, if you're going to waste your money, just put it in my pocket.
Just give it to me, please. I'll make the bet with you. How's that?
Yeah. Okay. Mm. Now looking at receivers, we'll just wrap it up with receivers after this. So it's funny. I'm looking at the NFL, you know, tracker, and their top rated wide receiver is DK Metcalf. Mm-hmm. Who went in the second round of the Seahawks. The Seahawks need a receiver, you know, need some more, because I think Baldwin is, you know, falling back to earth. I guess he's getting a little older, but I don't know, man. Something about these Seattle receivers, they just never catch any passes.
Yeah, it's really weird, right? For as great as Russell Wilson is, yeah, the passing game isn't exactly prolific. It is kind of a little bit of an odd conundrum, right?
Yeah, I think he had 30. I think he had 35 touchdown passes last year, and then you look at the stat line. Everybody has like 2 touchdown receptions. It's like, what is this? It's like somebody's cooking the books.
It's like, someone's got to go audit those.
Either Russell Wilson's not really throwing 35, or there's like a receiver that like got cut from the roster that had like 27 reception touchdown receptions.
It is something else, isn't it? It's just an odd. They have an odd brand of football. I think it is. Every reception they make that's a big play is like some off the wall. Bit of luck or something. It's
bounce
weird.
Off a couple helmets and then lands into a guy.
It is like that.
He was selling like beef out of a van the week before, and they called him up or something. Like Seattle is so weird. Like the Patriots are that way too. So we shouldn't be throwing shade. But it's like, dude,
I agree.
Who's catching the touchdown passes?
I know
35 of them out there. Like, who's catching them? I don't see anybody.
Yeah, you're right. I'm so with you.
It's so weird.
Yeah.
So anyway, DK Metcalf is as talented as he is. Like, one of my rules, aside from Lockett, I like Lockett as a Seahawk. And he's literally the first Seahawk receiver that I suggested being on anybody's roster recently. Outside of that, man, I just stay away from Seahawk receivers. I just don't draft them. There's no point.
I recommend that as well.
Yeah. It's the same thing with the Dirk Cutter led running backs. He's in Atlanta. I'm staying away from the running back situation in Atlanta. I don't care about, what's his face? Devonta Freeman. I'm not going to draft him.
Right.
He's a Dirk Cutter running back. I'm not going to take him. So you got Marquise Brown, with Baltimore. Baltimore needs receivers. So I think that was a good thing. But, you know, I wonder though. We talk about situation a lot. Like, Lamar Jackson doesn't really throw the ball, right? So,
well, he hasn't, you know, up until this point.
Yeah, and Greg Roman's running the offense there now. They're going to put that kind of Kaepernick-like system, that Buffalo system with Tyrod Taylor. They're not going to be throwing that much. They're going to be a running kind of ground and pounds, a little bit of read option. And then, you know, once your safeties are up, they'll get. So, you know, he might get some touchdowns, but he's not going to get the yards. He's not really worth the investment for me. He's more of a daily fantasy play. Let's see who else. You have Paris Campbell going to the Colts. I think he could be really good. Any receiver on the Colts could be good. And T.Y. Hilton needs a running mate there. So if he can be the number two receiver in Indianapolis, that could be huge.
Love T.Y. Hilton.
Yeah, love T.Y. Hilton. And if Campbell can basically be his Robin to T.Y. Hilton's Batman, that, you know, he'll score a lot of points. And I like Indianapolis a lot this year. Spoiler alert for a preview. I like Indianapolis, man.
Yeah, me too. I'm with you.
They got some momentum. Yeah. You got A.J. Brown going to the Titans. I don't care. Wake me when they find a quarterback. I know they have Ryan Tannehill. We'll see what goes on there. We also have Deebo Samuel, who I actually like quite a bit for San Francisco, just because the San Francisco offense, if everybody's healthy, you have Garoppolo throwing the ball. You know, last year I projected Pierre Garçon higher than everybody else had because, again, of the opportunity. Garçon got injured, Garoppolo got injured, everything went off the rails there. But, you know, they have they drafted a young wide receiver last year who was pretty good. I liked the guy, but I didn't really feel like he would be the number one receiver. He was more like a DeSean Jackson who can put up like really big stats, but he's not your possession receiver. He's your big home run play receiver. This guy, Deebo, which I love that name, by the way, Deebo can be your number one receiver there if everything works out. So I like that a lot. And the last guy I'll talk about here is N'Keal Harry. Look, Gronk retired for the Patriots, right? They need to find somebody who can be a red zone threat. They need somebody that can catch touchdowns. Harry, that's basically all he did in touchdowns. And honestly, I think Gronk also went to Arizona State along with Harry. So maybe the scout in that Western Conference over there. I think they're in Pac-10, Pac-12 or whatever they're in. Mm-hmm. Pac something. So yeah, I mean, he could be good. I like him for fantasy. Although the receiver, the Patriots have whiffed on receivers in the draft too. So who the heck knows, right? All right, man. I think that kind of takes us through some of the things. Did you have any other kind of like top line thoughts, Brad?
No, sir. I'm looking forward to game two of the Warriors and the Rockets.
Yeah, it's going to be a good one. I think with all the criticism that came out, I think there might be a Bovada story on that as well. I can't remember, but with all the criticism that the Houston Rockets and all the complaints about the officiating, I think Golden State's going to come out and say, oh yeah, you think the officials are giving us the game? We'll see. I'm taking Warriors. I don't even know what the over is. Let me look it up, actually. Let me pop over. Where are you? Bavada, Bavada, Bavada. Okay, so I have them pulled up here. Houston, and people are going to catch this afterwards because it's going to air after the game. But Houston is +5. I'm taking Golden State by 10.
Mm-hmm, I agree.
Yeah, I think Golden State will cover the spread there. We'll see. Milwaukee's a -7. Man, I like Boston there, man.
Me too.
At least to cover. I don't think Milwaukee's 7 points better than Boston at this point. Yeah, Boston, I think, has the most talented roster.
Well, for sure, for sure. And I don't think that they needed the number one seed to feel good about themselves. Milwaukee did.
Yep. And Milwaukee reminds me of those old Magic teams, you know, with Tracy McGrady, you know, that you have one star and then you have a bunch of other people that are, like, trying to figure out how to play with the star in the playoffs. But, you know, in the playoffs, there's more contact. You know, you can play just a more physical brand of basketball. It's a different it's different than the regular season, man. I think Milwaukee's going to struggle. No shade to Milwaukee. I like Milwaukee a lot, but it's a different season, man. It's a different season, so.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Well, we'll see, man. By the time this podcast airs, we're either going to be right or wrong. And figure that out. All right, everybody. Hey, thanks for listening. Go out, get paid.